When you're acting as your doodle's teacher during training, do you know their learning style? Take our exclusive fun and free quiz to find out at thedoodlepro.com/learning and make training more fun and successful. You can tell that our guest today just loves doodles and poodle mixes and poodles. They just really seem to appreciate them. And that is such a delight from a fellow trainer. Part one of my interview with the owner and head trainer for Calm Canine Academy, Karishma, was such a hit that it spurred the most conversations and comments from any of our episodes. I strongly suggest catching episode 28, which is part one of this interview if you haven't listened to it already. But today is part two, and it is just as fabulous. You are going to be amazed at how something that could have been a real tragedy turned out to be quite a success to celebrate. Anyone who has a dog who is prone to barking, experiencing anxiety or fear, or being reactive will understand this unique victory and why I think there should be a special ribbon for it. Doodle breed dogs are easy to love, but can be challenging to parent. I'm doodle expert Corinne Gearhart, also known as the Doodle Pro, and I'm here to help doodle parents have a more fulfilling and rewarding experience with their doodles. No one has professionally worked with as many different doodle breeds or has more experience with doodles than I have, and I love to share my expertise in a fun, compassionate, and non-judgmental way. From my years of work and education in the pet care and dog training industry, I have an incredible network of skilled training, grooming, and veterinary professionals to share their knowledge with you and give you the doodle-specific answers you're looking for. I hope you enjoy today's episode as I help you parent your doodle like a pro. Congratulations to this week's winner of Doodle of the Week. Enjoy listening to Penny's mom explain why she is so deserving. Congratulations.
My name is Natalie Pacheco. I am from San Diego, California. My dog is a medium standard golden doodle, brown, named Penny. The funniest thing she does is lay upside down in the couch with her arms and legs spread open and be lazy all day long.
If you think your doodle deserves to win this award, make sure you go to thedoodlepro.com/doodle of the week and let me know why they are so deserving. I loved seeing a recent video of somebody was working on something in your backyard and your poodle was able to rest and was able to see. It wasn't managed where it was blocked, but it looked like your poodle was able to be at rest and calm with that happening. But it took work to get him there.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot of work. It took me really understanding him to get him there, like really understanding him, because for a long time, I didn't really get what he needed. I didn't understand what he needed to be happy and comfortable and healthy. And it took us a good 4 or 5 years to figure it out together. But we finally got him to that point now. And to me, Hera is like an example of, he gives me a lot, not hope. Like, I believe in behavior change. But yes, for him, he's really showed me, like, it's gone above and beyond what I thought was even possible. I'm like, wow, you are legit chiller than I am right now.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And we haven't actually told anyone this, but it's such an excellent anecdote that I have to tell you now. We actually got burgled the other day.
Oh.
And he didn't even make a peep. He was in the room upstairs chilling. I was like, you are so non-reactive now. You are useless. This is rubbish. I was like, you can't the other direction now. I was like, come on, not even a bark, not even one little buff. This is ridiculous.
So you were burglared and your anxious, reactive dog, you were able to get all the way. It was like, mom told me my home is safe. I feel safe.
We were like, what is the point of you being reactive and anxious and highly strong if we can literally get burgled? And but it's a sign of how his nervous system is so much healthier than it used to be. And I think that's what we say, high strung, isn't it? And why doodles and poodles can be so high strung is because they are sensitive and emotional. And that's what makes them smart. And what makes them amazing to be as companions. And no dog has those human eyes quite like the doodles and the poodles.
True.
But it does mean that they are much more likely to develop problems around stimulus that we can't control, like door knocking and apparently burglars, but he didn't care. So good training, I guess. But all the guard dog trainers around the UK are like, oh my God, Krishma, what are you doing? This is rubbish.
I'm really glad that you can laugh about it. We have an episode coming up called Our Guard Dogs Friendly. And people love the idea of picking a dog whose nature, people actually don't think of doodles and poodles as having that in them, but picking a dog even having a stronger reputation for being a guard dog because it'll protect us. And that also means that your dog is living at that level day in and day out. And the odds of you having a friend over, wanting to host dinner, what needing to have an appliance repairman come in the house are much higher than being burglared. So what's your day-to-day life like? Do they need to be at that level all the time? So I'm glad you can laugh about it.
Yeah, I know. We were very lucky. It was the reason we can joke about it is that everyone is safe and nothing serious.
Yes, good.
Nothing serious happened. We just now have this really hilarious anecdote that this dog who used to be barking at 50 times a day at any noise from out, drops off the pin outside, and he's just snoozing away in the attic. They're not even paying attention to anything. I'm like, oh, God.
There should be a special ribbon or plaque that goes to parents of reactive dogs that their dog can respond that way.
I have a brilliant idea, honestly. Like, this is something that, like, dog sports and everyone who loves doing those things, I would love a version of that for reactive. Like, took a walk, didn't bark. You get a ribbon. You get two ribbons and a cookie. Like, that would be great.
It's way more embarrassing than a dog that won't jump through a hoop. There's a lot of social pressure when you're in an urban area or even walking around the neighborhood in a suburban area when your dog is lunging and growling and pulling. There is a lot of social pressure that people feel guilty or embarrassed about.
And so I've been there too.
Yeah.
Especially with, I was listening to your podcast about adolescent dogs today, actually. And you were talking about how, especially as they get bigger and they're not puppies anymore, and that period of time, adolescents, so frequently when we're seeing behavior problems propping up, the embarrassment factor is definitely a big thing that we work with our clients on about that, because you have to have there has to be a balance, right, between meeting social needs, your social needs, and then meeting the dog's needs as well. And it's a complicated conversation for sure.
I forget which book it was recently where they suggested laugh out loud when your dog is growling and barking and lunging. If you just start laughing on the walk, you can't be like scolding and correcting because we feel a lot of pressure of that we need to punish them to look like a good dog parent.
Yes, I see this all the time. And some of the tips that I give in my dog guardians are sing happy birthday, talk to the dog really loudly about how silly it's been. Oh, are you very angry and scary? Very good. Terrifying. Yes, well, you saved us. You protected us. Like, whatever you need to do to make yourself feel a little lighthearted in that moment. Because there is a lot of social pressure to punish, to scold, to show people around you that you're handling it. Oh, no, I'm being the authoritarian. I'm making sure that I'm telling them that's wrong. Or maybe people want to see that you're in charge and feel safe.
Right.
And I totally get it. The thing that I always say to guardians is that as good as it feels in the moment to do that, like as much as it feels like you're addressing the problem, always ask, oh, is it working? So you're seeing a reduction in the behavior.
Brilliant.
That's usually the question I bring up at this point. I'm like, okay, so you're seeing the behavior go down, and they say, oh no. And I say, ah, so it's not actually working, is it? And they're like, no. And usually that explains, one, if the behavior is not immediately going away, you are just shouting into the abyss.
Yes.
And that's not really helpful for one. So functionally, I'm always like, is this working for you? And so frequently people come back to me and saying, you know what? They stop in the moment, but it just comes back again later. Or they stop for a second, but they look scared, and then they bark again a second later. And I think what that really addresses to me is that trying to shut down that behavior in the moment is likely not the strategy that will get you to your end goal, which is that you can walk down the street and Fido's happy and you're happy and Bob the neighbor can say, hello, Fido. And Fido goes, hey, Bob. If we want that picture and not Fido who's barking and lunging, dealing with the problem as it pops up like whack-a-mole is not going to be effective.
And yes,
the worst case, which I'm sure you say to your guardians all the time, in the worst case, it can actually make it worse. Oh. And that's when I'm really concerned. So basically, coming in with two big reasons. Number one, it's not going to get you to your end goal. Likely, it's not even going to work. And two, if it does work, it could make some really bad things happen down the line. It could make behaviors worse. It could increase fear. It could create more frustration. Depends on the manner of your dog's barking, but regardless, it's never going to be a super effective solution. Would you agree with that? You said give it a similar kind of advice to your clients.
Absolutely. And I think when you ask, is it working? It's brilliant, because is our goal to be seen as an authoritative dog owner and to impress the neighbors? Or is our goal to fix this problem? Which is more important, that we performed in front of the neighbors? There's a social pressure to do so. But do we really want Fido to feel comfortable and happy when they see the neighbor and to be able to enjoy the next decade of walks together peacefully and calmly?
100%. And that's always my biggest thing, as I say, like, we're putting in the work in the short term and it feels like it's going to take a long time. But especially with doodles, you've got a long life ahead of you with this dog.
Luckily.
Again, it's great. It's a fantastic thing. Like, I hope to have many years, decades with my poodle, and it's worth it. It's so worth it. And also, it's not actually that long. I always just put that in perspective. I'm like, you know what? I was the worst until I was like 23 years old. I was awful. My poor parents. I'm sure. Come on. Let's be real. Especially me being a millennial. It took me a while, but like, fully mature. We're talking maximum 4 years of adolescence and those really difficult years for the dog. So I'm always saying to people, like, listen, it's not. It's still a relatively good time frame we're talking about here. Like, it feels like a long time to have to put behavior change protocols in place.
Yeah.
Yet it feels better to just go, oh, shush, Fluffy. But what's more impressive, that or actually fixing the problem? And then you go to your neighbor, and your neighbors go look at you and say, wow, it's so cool. Fluffy looks so much more comfortable and so happy and well behaved. And that's the payoff, but it just happens a little later down the line.
And your connection and your relationship with this dog has only grown stronger through that style of training.
Oh.
It's next level. So people hear reactivity and sometimes they might think that's like just barking or lunging, but how do you define reactivity when working with guardians?
Sit and stay right there. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Dogs' body language is a foreign language to us humans. Are you wondering how fluent you are? Take our free quiz at thedoodlepro.com/body and find out how fluent you are in reading dogs' body language.
Really good question. So there are many different definitions. My one that I use the most is an overreaction to something that is a relatively innocuous everyday stimulus. Mm-hmm. For example, that could be a fear response. So I'm very scared of the mailman. I'm very scared of the child on a scooter. Or it could be, I'm super excited about seeing my friend on the street, or I'm a bit unsure about this. So it could be any emotion. It could be a good emotion or a bad emotion, but it's just too much. It's inappropriate. It's like an inappropriate amount of that emotion for me. So there are a few different definitions of reactivity. My favorite is just an overreaction to a stimulus. So I think most of the time we're talking about lungy, barky behaviors. So dogs that are having often fear responses, sometimes frustration, but we can also see reactivity looking like avoidance and flight. So it's really any of that fight, flight, freeze, fawn spectrum to me anyway. And so we could see dogs that are moving towards the trigger, ruff, 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 get away from me, or dogs that are hiding and pulling away from the trigger. Aww. No, go away, leave me alone. In either case, we're looking at like elevated blood pressure, increased heart rate, rapid respiration. The physiology is lit up of the animal. There's some sort of big emotion there, but what emotions? I don't know. But usually we're looking at like a dog moving towards or away from the thing, whatever that trigger is.
And both are an effort to create distance. So,
absolutely. Right? Yeah, sorry, I should have definitely. I always forget that. I've got to this point now where I've said these things so many times. I'm like, I have to have doubled down.
Didn't
on
you hear me last time?
You know this, right? No, 100%. Even when those dogs are pulling towards other dogs, very frequently, or all people,
it's a 10 attempts to increase the amount of space between them and that trigger, right? Mm-hmm. A great example used to be, and still can be, sensitive towards new dogs. He was brought up in the Brooklyn dog park scene, which you can imagine is not the most polite and regulated of social scenes.
Yes. And
what he would do is he'd enter a space, he'd find a dog, he'd give him the eyes, and he'd go right up to them and put his face in their face and go, "Oi, you're going to make trouble." And I mistook it as friendly. I was like, oh, he's going up to them. But it's kind of
this pro-social.
Pro-social. I thought movement towards, he wants to interact. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like somebody rushing to the edge of their property with a shotgun being like, "Get off my yard." Technically, you're moving towards the trigger. But actually, you want to create distance between you and that trigger, even though the movement is you're trying to scare them away. And that's also what's happening when we're seeing growling, even snapping, even biting behaviors.
If we go back to our dogs being reactive and trying to create distance with fear, what do you think of people trying to help them get used to it by pushing more interaction or bringing them closer to the thing that they're barking at or hiding from?
Such a good question. And this is, again, where I'm going to pull from my personal experience of making every single wrong decision that you can with your dog. It's so classic. I did all of these things that I now spend all of my time telling folks not to do. I made all of these mistakes, and this one was my biggest one. So my poodle was extremely fearful from a young age. He literally pooped when trucks went past him in Brooklyn when we lived there. It was really sad. Yeah, he was really scared. And I thought at the time that I was being really positive reinforcement based. I was bringing really good cookies out, and I was putting the cookies closer to the cars and trying to get him to go and say hi to people,
like luring it up,
luring him, placing the treats on the floor, saying, "Come on," showing him the cookie, trying to get him to do it. And what ended up happening was my dog stopped eating food from my hand.
All together.
Oh, yeah. He's very sensitive.
His bingo is working. Yes.
Keeping it out. He was like, so Krishma is going to tell me I'm safe, and they're going to show me food, and that's going to make me that's going to be an unsafe situation. So he's learning that he can't trust me to keep him safe. He's learning that the food predicts scary things. And many instances happened with me and Hira where I lured him closer to a scary thing, and then that person said, "Hey," or the dog moved and he completely panicked because he was way too close for comfort. And it's a boundary issue. That's how I see it now. The way I see it is Hira was saying to me, "I'm uncomfortable, Mum. I'm a little bit numb, a little bit uncomfortable." And I was essentially bulldozing him and going, "You're fine. It's going to be fine. You're totally okay. You're going to be great." And it really resonated with me, especially because when I was young, I had a very traditional South Asian upbringing where I was very much expected to be very high achieving, to perform very well. And I think lots of people have this experience of being pushed by caretakers and guardians. And very frequently, I think the experience of that creates is more anxiety and more feelings of unsafety and feeling trapped. Not only now are you feeling uncomfortable, now everyone is looking at you and encouraging you to go towards this thing that you feel uncomfortable about. And
the pressure is building.
Yeah. And everyone, I can see when I look back at how I was working and I see guardians, they're trying so hard. They're using happy voices. They're trying to do the tricks that they learn in puppy school. And I see all the pieces, but then just not quite coming together. And what I've actually started saying to my guardians now, as I'm getting more and more clued into this, is often saying, now I don't even use that much food when I socialize puppies or when I work with fearful dogs, because sometimes the food makes you think that the dog's okay.
They might push further than they're comfortable with.
They'll do things that they're uncomfortable for money, essentially.
Yeah.
They're like, "I'm gonna do what I don't feel good about this, but I'm gonna do it for money because that money's really important to me." And removing food from the equation when we have fearful dogs can help us gauge true threshold. What is their true baseline? With no coercion, with no kind of manipulation at all, how far would you stand from this person if you had the choice? And I think that's a question we should be asking any fearful dog rather than jumping straight to how do we close the gap between the dog and the scary thing, we tend to find that they become conflicted. We don't get genuine behavior change. I don't know if you experience the same thing. You get, they'll go forward, they'll run away, they'll go to the person, and then they'll freak out. For true behavior change, it needs to really be on their terms. And I've made a rule for myself where I have to listen to the first nope that the dog gives me. So say I'm trying to move my dog towards a scary statue and he stops and he looks away. I don't say, come on, let's go. I say, okay, off we go then.
Immediately. Absolutely.
First time. That was so hard for me. I'm so pushy.
I know. If you give me a couple of thoughts, I love using food to change associations.
Yeah.
But not for lures. So I don't give the scary person, which isn't actually scary to me, but to the dog, this scary for some reason to them. I don't have them delivering treats. I don't ask for them to move closer to the scary item and deliver treats. I create the distance first. And then if my dog sees whatever it is, if they're reactive to other dogs, if they look, treat, like change association. Yes. And I do use their eating or not eating, like your poodle went all the way of the not eating from the hand. That they're over threshold and that they're not in a place. They can't access the training part of their brain.
100%. Yeah, the whole food question, the whole food thing is really interesting. I obviously still use, I'm a dog trainer. I still use food.
Yeah.
Especially to train new behaviors, especially to build comfort. I use a lot of food to help dogs regulate with sniffing and searching behaviors. And of course, I play games like Look at That or Engage, Disengage. And things like that, where, you know, when they look at scary things, they might get a cookie. 100%. Like you said, never, ever giving people treats to give the dog to encourage them to get closer. And I've also been experimenting, which is nerdy, but I've been experimenting recently with even removing some of the food from the equation in those counter conditioning setups and using, especially for dogs that are very food motivated, because sometimes I'm like, I don't even know how, are you sure?
How far are you pushing yourself past?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't trust you to tell the truth right now. And using things like play or sniffing or exploration or movement or something like that as reinforcers, because then I tend to find you just get different tests in chemistry, but you get different tests with different tools and see what works and doesn't work for that dog. But yeah, I think that reinforcement and the use of food with dogs has had this huge explosion over the last 10, 20 years. But I think we're now coming to this point where we're refining, where it's like treat doesn't equal good. Like food doesn't always mean positive. It's the dog that decides whether something is positive or not. And my dog would much rather watch someone from 40 feet away or less than that, 20 feet away, and gather information. Then be fed cookies by that person. He would feel too, just like I would like to, niche analogy, I would like to look at someone on Instagram before I go on a date with them and just figure out what's going on, what you're into. You're not a fascist, no? Okay, cool. You got a good tolerance.
Before I get closer. And
you like the same TV as me. All right, you're cool. Like, it's the same thing, right? We don't always want to go straight in for a hug. Sometimes we want to gather a bit of information. But yeah. Yeah, so very interesting conversation for sure around the food thing. It's something I've been thinking about recently a lot.
Food is seen as the good stuff that we pay our doodles with when we're training. But you're right, the menu's longer. You can pick other things as good stuff, but you're still always adding good stuff. I used to be a New Yorker too. I love, like, my favorite food is a good slice of New York pizza. And I don't love hairy spiders, but I might go around a hairy spider to get to that slice of pizza, which would be a really highly driven dog motivated by food if it's something really delicious. I don't feel any better about that spider. That spider didn't help me. The pizza didn't help me feel better. I just endured it in order to get to the thing I wanted. So I think you're right as to being cued in. It's not always, do I need to raise the value of the food? I need to be able to read my dog's body language and see what they
eat. I love that the menu is longer. It's such a good way of explaining it. And you're 100% right that it's all about figuring out exactly for your dog. Maybe we're not just going to keep raising the stakes. Will you do it for $10? No. How about 20? How about 50? Instead, it's about how do we make this experience something that the dog will do for 1 cent, for very little. They don't even need, they'll do it for free. They don't even need payment. They find it rewarding itself. That to me is a big part of like when working with fear and aggression, especially with extremely sensitive dogs, which does tend to be my area at this point. I tend to get my heroes, the dogs like that who will stop eating from hands or in the presence of humans altogether. We have to we have to be really careful, and it makes you a really good trainer because you have to figure out ways to make sure that they feel safe. But yeah, it's a, I love that. Man, we need to use that menu line. It's a really good
one. I'm going to use half of yours. I love following you on Instagram and seeing another beloved black dog. I say my black Cavapoos Nestle's, his major flaw is that it's just hard to photograph.
It's so hard. Videos.
Everything about him I adore, and I love his coat in person, but it's just harder to share online. And
I always say to my poodle, I'm like, for a virtual dog trainer who makes content for a living, I pick the worst breed because you are so handsome but so hard to photograph. Like, how is this my life?
We host doodles in my home in like a boutique boarding program, and people will say, I didn't see your dog. I'm like, he was there.
Just in the corner, smudged somewhere. Yes.
That shadow you thought you saw.
Or when they're like lurking in a corner of the room, sometimes you have no idea they're there, and suddenly they're like, oh God, Jesus Christ.
That isn't the case with Nestle, because wherever I am, he's half cavalier. So the Velcro is in full effect with him.
That's so funny. Here, like to lurk in dark corridors. It's like he's a very creepy little guy. He's great. We love him.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So I imagine that for people whose dogs have issues with fear or aggression, going to a training class really just pushes their dog over the threshold and they're not able to access just learning, both for the human and the dog.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I know many dogs for whom just even getting in the car, they're gone. Right? Even leaving the house, they're not eating. So how are they going to get to a training class? And many training classes are 4 or 5 weeks or something like that, 1 hour a week. I know many dogs, 5 hours of work. That's not going to hack it. You know, 5 hours in a training facility it's not going to work. And I used to teach classes like that. Actually, I used to teach in-person classes and in-person services in Manhattan. And after the pandemic and after the success that we saw working virtually, we've actually switched all of our services over. And I'm sure that you've been exploring how much amazing learning and community you can create using virtual platforms. And honestly, for us, it's been a game changer. Like I said, we specialize in these like very complex cases. So for us, creating services that are super accessible for fearful dogs, for clients all over the world, for folks who have schedules that are not super flexible or don't want to drive with their dog to go to training classes. So you've seen this amazing success through working virtually, especially working with fearful or aggressive or anxious reactive dogs. And we really center empowering guardians. So that's like our big thing. It's like our whole thing, our whole deal is we want to give you the skills. Like, you're going to live with this dog for however many decades. You're going to have probably dogs for many years of your life. Let's give you the skills you need to work through the kind of various concerns that you're experiencing with your dog. And let's make you your dog's advocate and you your dog's safe space and make you feel confident in their healing journey and how you're going to help them feel safer in the human world. And yeah, if you ever need any help, anyone needs any help from us, you can find us at Calm Canine Academy on Instagram. And that's basically where we live. We live there. We do our thing, and you can find loads of details about stuff that we have to offer there.
You've been really generous, and you have a discount for our listeners if they wanted to work with you virtually.
I absolutely do. Yeah. So you can use the discount code in capitals Doodle Pro, and you're going to get 20% off your first service with us. And that could be like a group class for fear and reactivity or an initial consultation where you speak to a specialist and talk through what a plan might look like and get the first steps up and running.
I so appreciate your joining us. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Doodle Pro Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And I invite you to follow me on Instagram at @TheDoodlePro for behind-the-scenes peeks at all of the adorable doodles I work with daily.